critically analyzing national affairs. This is State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk. TNT.
Welcome to State of the Nation on today's News Talk. For Brian McClain, I'm Timothy Shea. We are coming to you live from Central Texas and Central New York. You can visit us on the web at tntradio.live and download that app. That's a really great way to follow us and check out all the great programming here on TNT. Brian, we would be remiss if we didn't say to all of our friends in Australia who are enjoying their Saturday morning coffee, may the 4th be with you.
Yeah, well, you know, that's one neat thing about how we timestamp our shows, because, of course, we're based, TNT's based in Australia. So when you're looking in our archives, keep that in your back pocket. It's usually marked one day after it actually airs here in the United States because of the vast time difference. But it is that day over there, Timothy.
It is indeed. And ruh-roh, looks like either Henry Cuellar, Democrat from Texas's 24th district, either deviated from the Democrat plantation's false narrative by half a millimeter, or the Dems simply needed some cannon fodder to throw under the bus to inoculate themselves and being soft on crime. NBC reported that the Justice Department has indicted Cuellar, who's represented Texas's 28th congressional district since 2005. And the 28th stretches, for those that aren't familiar, north from the Rio Grande River all the way to San Antonio's southern suburbs. It is a big, big border district. But surprisingly, the indictment has nothing to do with Mexico or the cartels. It comes roughly 2 years after his official and campaign offices were raided by federal authorities exploring connections to U.S. businessmen with ties to, wait for it, Azerbaijan. Just coincidentally, Brian, he co-chairs the Congressional Azerbaijan Caucus. What were the odds?
Yeah, and I gotta also kind of wonder, I mean, I'm still going through the facts on this one, but I was just reading about it before we came on. And, you know, Texas's southern districts are where we have a lot of Mexican Americans and a lot of Mexican American representatives. So, you know, I we know that the Biden administration is doing their best to curry favor with the Latino voters in the country. So I can't help but wonder if this helps to, you know, maybe on multiple fronts, chips away at that a little bit. It also removes someone's voice from politics, you know, who actually looks like the people that he's talking about, maybe in some ways, you know, and he's been very critical of the border policy.
Well, he has, but, you got to wonder, because Azerbaijan is so random for a Hispanic representative named Cuellar, who represents the valley down there along the Rio Grande. It looks as though this might be Democrats trying to inoculate themselves against a charge of being soft on crime. It's like, no, we're not soft on crime. Look, we even indicted one of our own. Just
it's
like
a pretty pathetic attempt. If that's what it is, I agree with you that that's definitely a factor. But I mean, the statement that it makes really falls on deaf ears, I would think.
Well, it's like here in New York State, they went after a Democrat for illegal voting, but it was in an off year Democrat primary. Right. So like, wait a second. What does that have to do with anything? Well, it gives them an opportunity to say, no, we're all for election integrity. See, we even had one of our own arrested for it. Yeah, in an election that basically didn't count. Brian, I think it's because they're mannequin in a panic. Brian, Donald Trump is now in blowout territory. In the latest Rasmussen poll, he leads Biden by 10 to 12 points. It has nearly doubled in the last poll, and it could go even higher after the unexpected jump we saw today. The last poll numbers have Trump at 26%, Biden at 36%, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. at 9%. But last month, Trump led Biden by only 6 points, 44 to 38 points. And here's what's really troubling for the Democrats. In a five-person race, Trump expanded his lead over Biden to 12 points, 48% to 36%. And it doesn't look like it's getting better anytime soon. Black Americans, who typically vote for Democrats at 90% or better, Yeah, they're voting for Trump 21%. Biden's only pulling a dismal 61% instead of 90%. And moreover, Brian, Hispanics, and maybe this ties into the Cuellar story, Hispanics now favor Trump 41% to 38%. Let that sink in.
Absolutely. The numbers don't lie.
They certainly do not. And neither do we. And we really don't even sleep because we never go home at TNT. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on today's News Talk TNT.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio TNT. TNT.
It's college graduation season, and many graduates are leaving the groves of academe with diplomas in hand, but no job, at least not a full-time job in their chosen field. And undergraduates are having a hard time landing even unpaid internships. In such a competitive job market, you'd think that candidates would endeavor to put their best foot forward, especially on social media. But many employers are finding that to be less common than you'd imagine. Joining us now to explain is Isaac Lopez, Communications Director at RedBalloon.work. Isaac, welcome back to State of the Nation.
Timothy, Brian, it's great to be back with you.
So I'm seeing an awful lot of people that seem to be trying to make themselves unemployable on social media, Isaac.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's really easy to do that these days. And there's a lot of people that are my age coming out of college, and employers just don't want to hire them. We have a lot of data backing this up. We poll 80,000 small businesses across the U.S. monthly, and 40% of them say that they don't even want to look at a resume with a four-year degree listed on it. And another 40% said that it doesn't even matter.
Wow, that says a lot about the state of education as a whole. You know, we were speaking with our friend Joseph Lombardi yesterday from Ironhawk Financial, and he was saying that he's, you know, done a couple interviews lately and, you know, has some young people come in that, you know, have decent education on their resume. But then when he asks some basic questions, they're just, you know, they don't have it. And he's like, they just don't know. And he said, you know, I was nice to the guy and I said, hey, look, you know, your school didn't do you right. And you're just missing some of this information. You know, he didn't say whether the guy got the job or not. But I think maybe the situation he was describing is something that a lot of employers are seeing. And what you just said kind of cements that for me.
Yeah, unfortunately, the degree isn't cutting it anymore. Employers really need workers that have critical thinking, that can think on their feet, adjust, take a situation, analyze it, and then try to adapt to it. And a lot of the graduates coming out of today, coming out of the colleges today, unfortunately, aren't trained for that.
They're not. And what's scary, Isaac and Brian, is my father was a manager at the New York Telephone Company back in the his whole career, 60s, 70s, 80s, until he became commissioner of 911 services here in Onondaga County. And they used to have to run remedial English and remedial math classes for high school graduates. Okay, so these would be employees coming in with a high school diploma, entry-level positions, clerical positions, and the like. And they found that they didn't even have simple mathematics and communication skills. And so they were running remedial classes back in the 1980s. Those classes now are being run by companies for college graduates. This push to make college the be-all and end-all and everybody's got to go to college has essentially just taken a high school education and shifted it to college. People who went to college 50 years ago, I look at these graduates and say, they couldn't have cut it.
No, they couldn't, unfortunately. And one of the things that a lot of people coming out of high school are doing are just skipping college wholesale and going straight into the trades or going to a Google boot camp or looking to upskill themselves in such a way. Maybe they'll take an entry-level job, but that entry-level job offers training for advancement later on in the company. And so they can get into a better paycheck without the $120K in debt.
This idea of the trades, I'm finding sort of having an evolutionary view of what it is. It's almost like it's being said so much now that I'm concerned that in 10 years we're going to have too many plumbers. You know what I mean? And plumbers aren't going to be making as much money because there's so many types of positions that are now at risk that this has become a big thing. Like, yeah, why the heck would I? What's it cost to go to CUNY? Like $89,000 a year or something like that? I mean, it's ridiculous. So, what do you think about that? How does that change the changing mindsets of young people, especially those that don't want to get victimized by the college system and have this experience we're talking about, how does that affect the workplace in the long term, and where does Red Balloon fit in?
Yeah, Brian, that's a great question. I think one of the things that we are finding as we're helping a lot of these more blue-collar roles get filled through our recruiting process is that there still isn't a lot of supply out there. So even in another 10 years, if a lot more people, say 1 out of 10, decide to start going and get the training to become a plumber, to become an electrician, there's still quite a bit of work you have to put into to get into and certified in those trades. Even my brother-in-law is going through trying to become an electrician, and that takes 3, 4, 5 years to get the right certification. So that still takes time, and you can work on the job as a journeyman, and before a journeyman, you can be an apprentice. So there's still some hurdles to clear to get into those trades. And so I think that there will be a surge of people interested in those trades, but I don't think it's going to completely overrun. And from what I hear, there's way more demand for a plumber than there is right now for, say, someone in tech. There's lots of people in tech.
Yeah, and let me just assuage those fears, Brian. We'll always need plumbers and electricians because all of the plumbing fixtures and electrical boxes and cabling and connectors are going to be made in China. So they'll be in every other month to replace this crap.
Well, you know, that my question was, I have to admit, somewhat spurred by one of the most recent South Park mini movies that they made, where all the tech people and all the white collar workers just became obsolete. And the handymen were the ones that were, you know, all of a sudden becoming billionaires and buying rockets and, you know, turning into Elon Musks and stuff like that. I think it's kind of an interesting flip. And there is, you know, something to it that we're seeing here.
Yeah, leave it to Matt and Trey to foresee the trend. But we've seen it before, though, right, Isaac? I mean, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg, none of them have college degrees. In fact, they're college dropouts, all of them.
Yeah, in fact, the CEO and founder of RedBalloon.Work didn't even go to college. And he ran a global tech firm before he started RedBalloon. And he did that for 2 decades very successfully. So there are plenty of pathways out there for people to excel without going to college. And I think that this is a big shot across the bow for universities and four-year degree institutions to make a pivot now, because demand is going to be declining since our population isn't growing like it used to. In fact, we're a low replacement rate. And so they're going to need to pivot anyway, but they should do so in tandem with their local economies to make sure they're actually helping people find good work in their local communities to continue to build up the places that they are.
I agree. In fact, I am a huge advocate of higher education, having been a teacher and very active in my college alumni association, alumni council president, and all of that. I think a third of the colleges need to close, and we're starting to see that. One a month. Our college here in my little town in central New York just closed last year. A year ago was their last graduation. And I think it needs to happen because we've got too many people incurring too much debt, learning too little.
Yeah, and I think you would be surprised if you did studies of people coming out of colleges with certain degrees, how it's not 100% guaranteed that you're going to end up in a job in communications. If I went to school for communications, it's not 100% guaranteed that you're going to be in that major, because life happens, the market happens, there's shift in demand. And I think what attracts people to the trades right now is there's a lot more certainty that route without all the debt. And you can go to build up those skills and know that there's a demand and a place for you.
And a great place to find a good job with an employer you'd enjoy working for is redballoon.work. We got about a minute left. Do you have any more of those great ads coming? Your ads are off the charts.
I can, if a few things fall into place this summer, I think we'll have a lot of great content coming out that I can't wait to share with you guys down the road. But I mean, right now we're finding that small businesses really need to recruit. And you don't think of small businesses using recruiters. You always think of the tech firms that use that for their big C-suite open positions. But small businesses are looking to recruit, and they can do so affordably with RedBalloon, because that's the only way you can find good talent nowadays.
It really is. It's an amazing place both for job seekers and for people looking for quality employees, redballoon.work. Isaac, can't thank you enough. Be sure to give us a heads up on that new content as it rolls out.
Absolutely. Thanks all.
You're listening to State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far-right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
Our next steps to space.
This time we go back to the moon to learn to live, to work, to invent, to create.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, our next guest is a public speaker, lecturer, comedian, and author of the popular esoteric Hollywood series, Sex, Cults, and Symbols in Film, which made it to Amazon's number one spot on its first month of release in the film and Hollywood category. He can be found in the Friday guest host spot on InfoWars Monthly, periodically on The Boiler Room at Alternate Current Radio, and was recently interviewed on The Duran. Jay Dyer joins us now. Jay, welcome back to State of the Nation.
Thank you, guys. Glad to be back. We always have great conversations over here.
Yeah. Looking forward to it, man. Thanks for joining us. And speaking of interesting conversations, I enjoyed the conversation over there at the Duran. You started talking sort of about globalism, and then it morphed into a discussion about where that meets up with transhumanism. Highly recommend that people check it out. That can be found on your website. Everything Jay Dyer can be found at jaysanalysis.com to make things simple. But Jay, I wanted to ask you, where are we in the timeline of globalism and transhumanism? I think we're pretty well versed in it now, but where actually are we?
Yeah, that was the question that kicked off that interview. And I went back to the Enlightenment. I went back to a Kant to point out that a lot of people forget Immanuel Kant, the famous German idealist philosopher. He wrote an essay about how if we had a global government, and if we had international free trade, then we would have world peace. So the sort of naive assumption there is that economics would just somehow solve man's problems if man could see the benefits of just having free trade. And I'm not saying that economic, you know, benefits wouldn't benefit everybody. Obviously, it would. But I think it's naive to think that that would lead to some sort of a utopia. And that kind of became a working model for a lot of the Enlightenment laissez-faire theorists. Then we got this reaction against them from Marxists and socialists, throughout the French Revolution and afterwards. And I think we've had this dialectic going on between these two ideas as to what would create the best situation. And then out of that, we got a synthesis version known as transhumanism that kind of plays on Hegel and the idea of everything kind of evolving through stages of upward ascent into what he called convergence, where everything will kind of unify. So we're moving towards this giant blob thing of all cultures, all governments, all religions, all everything becoming a blob. And some of the technocrats like H.G. Wells, even though he was a Marxist, he would chide a lot of his fellow Marxists in pointing out that it's the billionaire and the monopoly capitalists that would actually build the infrastructure of the global order that would roll out the socialists would then take over. And so I think we're at that point now where we've got essentially the technology infrastructure rolling out where, you know, we've got Larry Fink at BlackRock at the WEF this week saying, now it's time to have this full on, you know, technocratic Skynet order. That's what it's always been about. And that's got to reduce the population. So we're at this phase right now, long story short, of a lot of these long-term plans converging into the rollout. And I don't think AI is like going to take over everything. That's kind of exaggerated. But they are starting to roll out a lot of these plans that have been there for a long time in terms of with technocracy, at least 100 years or more.
I was really happy to hear you open talking about Immanuel Kant. I just, on X today, reposted a post about John Stuart Mill's essay on liberty. And on a typical day before I have my coffee, I'm more like Thomas Hobbes. Life is nasty, brutish, and short. But after my coffee, I'm more in the lines of Edmund Burke, who in his essay, Reflections on the Revolution in France, which is often mistitled Reflections on the French Revolution. And he wasn't just talking about the French Revolution. So he saw it as a global revolution against monarchies, against the church, against order. And right. He predicted Karl Marx 50 years before Marx's birth. So I think ultimately our hope resides in Burkean conservatism. I think socialism, the Marxists, they will always overstep as they have always done. The economic theories don't work. And I think the cultural, the use of Marxist philosophy and applying it to culture, I think that is similarly doomed to the dustbin of history. What say you?
I think you're right that they don't work, but they do work in a sense of being a kind of a wrecking ball to destroy things. Mm-hmm. So if you're a very cunning, malicious technocrat or zillionaire, you might understand that ultimately Marxism and socialism don't really work. They don't bring about the ideals they promise. They do work, however, to destroy the existing cultures and societies, to essentially consolidate wealth and then transfer wealth offshore. So I kind of agree with the Anthony Sutton thesis that Marxism and socialism have really always been a tool of very powerful moneyed elites that are very cunning. So they see it as a technology to destroy. And then ultimately, they want to have that convergence where all the systems sort of merge into whatever this. I mean, it's elements of democracy, elements of capitalism, elements of socialism. Fabian socialism really is where I think we're going in this this present technocracy.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, I was watching Dugin. I know you've spoken with Dugin before, trying to explain to Tucker Carlson what the ultimate meaning of liberalism is. You know, he was talking about, you know, liberals, liberation from what, and how that ultimately in a transhuman framework leads to liberation even from autonomy and from the self. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about when you talk about like a blob society, right?
Yeah, it's weird because you would think that more and more individuality might lead to more and more autonomy and freedom. But I think that the downside of more and more negative liberty or autonomy ends up, and that's kind of the logic of the classical liberal position that Dugin was critiquing. I agree with a lot of Dugin's critiques there. I don't agree with all of his solutions, but I think he's got the right critique of the philosophical problems in kind of classical liberalism, which is just that if we're always seeking more and more, quote, freedom from what and freedom to be what? And so the problem is that if you don't have any kind of purpose, any kind of virtue ethic, any kind of metaphysic, which gives you meaning, it's really just constant pushing of boundaries. And that's why I think if you look at the arts or if you look at pop culture, you know, there's no real meaning in it. It's just always trying to be more degenerate, push the envelope more. But for what purpose? There's really no end to it. And this is what Huxley meant by the revolution being ultimately against man himself. So the revolutions that, you know, Burke was talking about, that your co-host was mentioning, those revolutions culminate in the revolution being against man. And that's what Huxley says. And that's what Dugin's point was.
Right, right. Okay, Jay, hold on line. We got a few more questions about this. We want to dig in a little bit deeper here on State of the Nation at today's News Talk. This is TNT.
We interrupt this program.
Here we go.
This is huge,
huge, huge news.
Huge, huge,
huge news.
Huge.
You need to listen to this.
Now, TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The U.S. labor market exhibited signs of cooling as it added 175,000 jobs in April, significantly fewer than the 243,000 jobs expected and down from 315,000 in March, reported by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Downing Street condemned recent protests in Peckham and Margate against transferring illegal immigrants to the Bibby Stockholm barge in Dorset, describing the actions as unacceptable.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Go to jaysanalysis.com for all things Jay Dyer. And, of course, subscribe over on the YouTube, the Rockfin, the Rumble, all those places. Now, Jay, let's take it out of theory for a moment here, and let's look at practice as how the, you know, let's look at how this applies to, say, I don't know, some current event, like maybe James O'Keefe and this most recent CIA thing that a lot of people are talking about now. How does that fit into the plans?
Yeah, I think this was really another confirmation that me, you, Patrick, everybody that, you know, is in our circles, we've known this for a long time, that there is a breakaway national security establishment that's the real shadow government that's really calling the shots. And we could see that for a long time for many, many books, many, many white papers and documents. But for most people, it's not really solidified as an existing thing until they see some person from that establishment admitting it. So these sort of sensationalist things, which, you know, it's great that we have this, but we've already known this. We've already known this is how the shadow government operates. But these types of leaks and these undercover, you know, swiping, meet somebody on Tinder operations that he does are great, because this really wakes up normies and boomers who are still kind of stuck in this mindset of thinking that Joe Biden calls the shots. And no, it's the security deep state that calls the shots. And they have been, you know, wiretapping Trump, Melania. This is what we said all along. Whatever you think of Trump, this is like massively, you know, a huge admission of how the real power structure works, as well as withholding information from Trump during CIA briefings and so forth, which doesn't sound that devastating, but it's actually not legal to do this. So these are really circumventing of laws when it comes to how the country's supposed to function. Just a giant vindication again that we're run by a breakaway shadow government.
And they do it brazenly with impunity, knowing that they will suffer no consequences. We literally have Mike Pompeo on stage, on camera, saying, "I was a cadet," meaning at West Point. And what is the academy's motto? You know, don't lie, cheat, or steal. Well, in CIA, we ran classes in lying, cheating, and stealing. And everybody applauded and big laughs. And, you know, he says the quiet part out loud, knowing that there will be no consequences. I was really interested with your point just a few minutes ago, though, when you were discussing freedom and freedom from what, and if there isn't an overarching concept or ethic to which you can aspire, that it's kind of anomenism, right? It's just ennui, and that's where nihilism comes from, that nothing matters. Nothing is, you know, life is nothingness. I'm a traditional Roman Catholic, and it took me, admittedly, a long time, many decades, to realize the wisdom of the church's rules against birth control, rules against premarital sex, rules against living together, all the rules. Everybody said, you know, Catholic Church has so many rules. It took me a long time to realize that those rules are actually designed to free us. To free us from our baser selves, our baser instincts, to free us from being driven by our momentary passions, whether they be hunger, lust, greed, whatever, and free us from those and allow us the freedom to choose good, to choose to live honorably and do the right thing and aspire to be more than our base animal instincts.
I would agree. I think a lot of people have the misconception that law is somehow inherently binding, but rather law can actually be the only real basis for freedom. You can't have freedom without law, without virtue, without a moral code, without a moral law that's objective and not subjective. And so, although I'm not Roman Catholic, I'm Orthodox, we would definitely agree on the basic principles of the Ten Commandments, and that you can't really have a functioning society without those, you know, those Ten
Commandments. John Adams. Yeah, John Adams even said it. Our Constitution is designed wholly, solely for a moral and God-fearing people and is wholly inadequate for the governance of any other.
Exactly. Yeah, without that theological transcendent basis, it really doesn't make much sense to talk about even rights. I mean, what's a right if we're just, you know, meat sacks? That's not a real thing. And in fact, if we're just meat sacks, if we're just rank materialists, rights suddenly become things that the state gives you. They're not things that you possess from God or being made in the image of the divine. It's a thing that's doled out to you by the state, and the state can then take it away from you. And that applies to the corporate state just as much as the communist state. So any kind of state default becomes the God power when you don't have these other elements of society that work as firewalls to limit that superstructure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of the religious structure and the Central Intelligence Agency, Jay, you sent me this article out of the American Conservative, and it's talking about OSS, even pre-CIA, OSS being involved with co-opting, Greek Orthodox leaders? Tell us what's going on with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is something that I'd read about many, many years ago when I was doing graduate work and looking at the history of both the Orthodox Church, the Roman Catholic Church, and the Protestant Church as well, that the deep state, the shadow government, they were not averse to or unconcerned with religion. In fact, I just recently lectured on an academic text from a guy named Michael Graziano, who put out a book about the history of the CIA and religion. And particularly in America, their interest in turning the religious societies, groups, churches into tools of Americanism for foreign policy. Now, we might think that that makes sense and it would be justified in the Cold War. But the problem is that when the Cold War ends, that power structure is still kind of in the background, pulling the strings and trying to turn a lot of the church leaders to whatever ends the American deep state wants. We've seen, of course, between the Ecumenical Patriarchate, who's kind of the most prominent of the bishops in the Orthodox Church, for a long time, they've been really close to the OSS and the CIA, again, via the Cold War and the concerns of the KGB and, you know, the bishops being compromised by the NKVD under Stalin and so forth. But the problem is that now they're still sort of linked to that power structure, and they're pushing all the things that Biden, the Clintons, you know, the World Economic Forum even are pushing. And so that's why we see such a unanimity amongst, you know, Pope Francis as you know, making overtures to Klaus in the World Economic Forum, as well as Bartholomew of the Orthodox Church. And this essay or this article that was written really solidifies that in a more public, I guess you could say, conservative, acceptable publication, which, you know, when I was talking about it 7, 8, 10 years ago, oh, fringe conspiracy theorists. Well, now we have a lot more academic and public discussion of this. It's harder to relegate all this to conspiracy fringe stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, absolutely. This is
it ties in with the O'Keefe leak, because same way that they try to control and manage the president, the intelligence structure, they're doing the exact same thing with these prominent clerics.
There you go. Yeah. And it's a long, long litany of it going back from before the CIA was even called the CIA. We're looking at 1942 right here, the OSS. Jay, we're just about out of time. Quickly, though, I heard you got called out by David Icke, old David Icke. What happened there?
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't anything, you know, over the top malicious. You know, I did a fourth hour, I think, last week that got a lot of traction. It got about 1 million views, actually, thanks to Alex and Icke. But I took a lot of issue with the arguments I was making about, you know, basically mathematics and nature pointing to God's existence and the divine. And so David Icke was calling it out and saying, no, it's not that. It's we live in a simulation. So I was offering David Icke an opportunity to do a debate if he would like to. I know he doesn't really do debates, but I would be happy to do that if he would like to. So yeah, I don't think we live in a simulation. I think that kind of raises a lot more questions than it solves. But it certainly points to the idea of a creator. I mean, who's programming the program if we live in a simulation?
Yeah. All right. Excellent. Well, that's excellent. I would love to see that. I'm sure all of us
it would be a lot of fun. I hope he does it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So David Icke, if you're out there, I've watched many a Jay Dyer debates. They're fun. You should do it. It'll be a good time. All right, Jay, we got to let you go. Thanks so much for joining us here. And again, go to jaysanalysis.com for all things Jay Dyer. We'll do it again real soon, Jay.
Absolutely. We got a big live event June 22nd in Las Vegas, too, if anybody in the Vegas, Utah area wants to come to our live event June 22nd.
All right. Excellent. June 22nd. Go to jaysanalysis.com for more information. Thanks, Jay. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
I'm Cal Fire Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least 2 exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
Internet crimes against children in New Mexico are real. And when it comes to protecting your children, the New Mexico AG's office and the ICAC unit are on the front lines. I'm New Mexico Attorney General Hector Balderas. There's nowhere to hide for online predators in New Mexico. We are working tirelessly using state-of-the-art technology and resources to seek out and find them wherever they are. Please talk to your children about the dangers that exist online, social media, games, and messenger apps. It's always important to know who you're talking to.
Help fight online predators in New Mexico by submitting a tip today.
The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McClain and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
If it's Friday, that can only mean one thing. Flyover Friday. And here with news from the flyover states is Dave Whited from Flyover Conservatives. Go to flyoverconservatives.com. Check out all their different podcasts and platforms. Follow them on X, Insta, Gab, Getter, Facebook, all the ways. You know how to do it. Welcome back to State of the Nation, Dave.
Well, welcome. I feel like I'm broadcasting from a secure location in, you know, out of Kansas City, you know, out to the coast. So you realize we're still here and still cranking. So alive and well in flyover country.
You know, I texted the other day, or I commented on a post on X, stealing the old song lyric, "The South's going to do it again." I said, "The South done did it again. We've got the fraternal states of America now, Dave, at both University of North Carolina, at University of Alabama, and now at Ole Miss."
Well, the college campuses are an interesting place because we've all been noticing a cultural shift in there for a long time. And we look at this generation, this Gen Z group. And, you know, as much as there's kind of flaws or things that, you know, they're like, God, hard to relate to, and the technology and things shift, the language, all these things faster than ever. There's always been these generation gaps. There's a campus culture that was, there's no Gen Z professors on any of these university campuses. It's your generation. It's us. It's all that is leading these campuses with this Marxist revolution that's been going on for a long time. And so these Gen Z guys kind of show up on the scene, and it's kind of interesting. The closer to being doers that these college campuses are, the more they're pushing back on the pro Hamas terrorist kind of mindset. You know, the Ivy League kind of embraces it as a whole, because those kids typically come from an educational background that endorses, you know, that kind of anti-American rhetoric. But kids coming from a public school going to a school like California, Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, I've seen videos coming out of there. That's a doer kind of college. That's a agricultural, but, you know, closer they are to doers, the more they're pushing back, because they're actually a part of this land. They love this land. It's their land. You know, this land was made for you and me, you know, kind of idea. And you see them at Ole Miss and North Carolina. And you never see protests at a vocational college, at a welding school. You never see uprisings there, because they have stuff to do. And I think we're seeing that this Gen Z generation, there may be some far left extremists in it, but there's this other group. I look at like my children, they push back on any of that kind of ideology of like, oh, we're weak and we're fragile and we need pronouns and all that. They're more David Goggins, you know, followers, you know, like stay hard, man. You know, what, get up early, stay, you know, my son starts most days at 4 o'clock in the morning. And like, I look at that generation, there's a big swing that is, like being a rebel on a college campus today, you might wear like khakis and a polo and talk more like Charlie Kirk. That's like the badass, you know, James Dean of this generation. There is a strong element, and it's not like a few, it's a lot. And we're seeing it on full display right now.
You know what my favorite thing Timothy, you know, my favorite thing about this whole thing is on pretty much all sides of the protest, I'm not seeing kids that are watching mainstream media anymore. I mean, you know, yeah. We all may think some are misguided here or there, but I think that, you know, one of the silver linings here is that people are realizing writ large now that the mainstream media narratives have been lying to us all the time, and we're seeing people organizing in different ways. I enjoy seeing the free speech on both sides. Cal Poly Humboldt State is one of the ones that's, you know, had a lot of issues. UCLA, obviously, they had 1,000 people in that encampment. And I find it interesting that the media is like only going to the most extreme people on either sides and kind of leaving out the smarter kids with nuance on both sides. It's always, yeah. You know, so I got to say, I am kind of sitting back and eating some popcorn, enjoying this, because what I'm seeing is the death of the mass media cartel here for this entire generation that we're talking about.
Yes, they're getting their influences from 1,000 different sources, and it's not cable TV, you know, and they're not watching that. That's not their influences. We had a really good show on the Flavor Conservative podcast this last week. It was so good. I went and bought 5 copies of this gal's book. Isabel Brown is her name. She's a young gal was good in debate in school. Good parents kind of push back on a lot of her ideas, but she has stats and arguments that are so strong about her generation. And it was incredibly hopeful. It might actually be the most conservative generation we've had in decades in our country. And I think they do get a lot of input from a lot of places. And I think some of their attachments to debt and buying things they don't need, and they're living a simpler life. There, a lot of them are going back to more crafts and things. I got nieces and nephews that went to school, engineering degrees, you know, STEM kind of programs. And on the weekends, my one niece, she crochets and knits. She has 3 kids. She's an engineer, and she, you know, makes Afghans by hand, you know, stitching, crocheting and stuff like that. I see them, you know, raising gardens, almost all of them garden, and they're getting milk from farmers that they know and they live in suburbs in Kansas City. You know, they're not out on farms, but they're realizing, like, I need to pay attention to what's in my meat. I need to look at this. And they're more open to homeschooling and educational options. They're not just like, well, this is what was done before. They're reevaluating and seeing as their actual evidence to these philosophies and ideas. And some of them are conservative philosophies their parents might have had, and some of them are far leftist extremist ones they got from their universities, but they are evaluating those things. I think we're going to see that as this school year ends. A lot of them are really ticked off their graduations are being canceled. They're really ticked off that, you know, the lack of adults in the room in the institutions that they're in are allowing their educational experience to get derailed, and they're being labeled as being knuckleheads. And I think they're kind of tired of it for the most part. So we're going to see this really strong. And I think we're going to see this, honestly, just my own take, we're going to see this blown up over the summer. The funding that's behind this, the push that's behind these, the matching tents on every campus, and the people that really want this to be an uprising, the importing of radical ideas and radical people through our border and flying them in. We're going to see this through the summer move from college campuses to, you know, to Main Street. And I think this is only going to escalate. But if these young kids can shut it down on their campuses, if they can stand by a flag and realize when we unify and say pound sand, these things kind of die down, maybe that's a model for the rest of the country as well.
Absolutely. And this is what we've been telling people all along, is that the only way to silence a bully is to punch him in the nose, or, and, you know, metaphorically, just speak back.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's happening. You know, your statement about being a true radical means wearing a pair of khakis and a polo shirt brought back fond memories of my college years. I'll never forget being in freshman chemistry first semester, and I had a Reagan Bush button on my jacket. I was wearing a blue button down and khakis and some boat shoes. And one of the other kids called me an effing conformist. And I said, oh, really, Mr. plaid shirt, denim jeans, and Timberland boots? Let's look over here. Oh, he's wearing what? Plaid shirt, denim jeans, Timberland boots, plaid shirt, denim jeans. There were eight guys in that class of 20 wearing plaid shirts, denim jeans, in Timberland boots. I said, look around. Who else is dressed like me? Point made.
Yes. It is. You were the cross the grain, against the grain radical.
And this generation reminds me so much of our generation. A friend of mine's daughter is going into her senior year now at LSU, which is the nation's second most conservative state university. Most conservative is one of the other smaller Louisiana State Universities down there. I think, I don't know if it's Lake Charles or one of them is dubbed more conservative, but these kids down south are not having it. And you know who was really digging it? The young women. They are so sick and tired of the soy boys. They want men to be men. They're all over TikTok, Insta, and all the platforms saying, you know, where are the men? Young women looking to get married are
absolutely
like, where
right.
are the men? And so I think we've reached a tipping point, and let's hope so. One thing that indicates a tipping point is the governor of Wisconsin. And he said something very interesting today. What was that?
Well, I think they're looking at, if you're talking about what I think you're talking about Wisconsin being a fly-in state, not a flyover state.
That's exactly it.
These states are... they've always been kind of important when it came to the elections. And I think it was obviously and famously overlooked by Hillary Clinton in 2016. She didn't go to, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, you know, a lot of these places. And I think the Biden administration is looking at that with a little more focus, but they're so poorly received in these places. And I think his comments specifically that there was this pitch of, it's been so crazy, like Trump caused this craziness in our country. And Joe Biden was going to be this like moderate, get things back to normal, this like more common sense.
Yeah.
Reach across the aisle. Let's all work together. Let's stop calling each other names, and let's go back to, you know, this idea. And so I think some people just wanted, you know, this peace and quiet. And I think what we're seeing is, if you had a really dysfunctional family with an alcoholic father that was verbally abusive to everybody, and nobody says anything, and they get together at Thanksgiving all the time, and then say one of the daughters marries a guy who's really healthy, and he comes into the family and just kind of points it out, like, hey, I think this guy is kind of abusive. He treats everybody terrible. He's drunk all the time. He's doing it, and it causes a stir. he didn't cause the problem. He pointed out the problem. Everybody then kind of recognized the problem, but they were all scared to ever say it. When Trump came onto the scene and all of a sudden he says, hey, these guys are fake news. Hey, there's a uniparty. Hey, the people that go to the chicken dinners in the Republican Party and they talk about pro-life, and they talk about these issues, and then they go vote totally different, and you can't tell the difference between a Democrat and Republican based on what they're doing. They're enriching themselves at the expense of the people. Like, he pointed these swamp-like activities out, and that caused this blow-up like that young man would do at a Thanksgiving dinner. He'd be like, whoa, you called out dad's hypocrisy, and it's all disarray. He didn't cause the problem. He just pointed out the dysfunction in the family, and everybody kind of recognized, you know, hey, the emperor's not wearing any clothes. And so the people wanted peace when, you know, hey, we'll bring in Biden, and they realized it went more radical. He was controlled by people that have no interest in America, and actually they would rather rule over a pile of ashes than ever give up power in this country. And that's kind of what we're seeing in play here. And so he's received in a state like Wisconsin, in Green Bay, in Wausau, Wisconsin, in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. When he's received so poorly, he's got to go back to Scranton and pretend he's Scranton Joe, but he's really not. And I think people recognize that this go around. And the more people see of him, the worse he pulls. The more they spend, the more they do. Every time they see his face and he says there is no inflation and the economy is doing great, the more they see him lie about the mess he's created, the worse he's received, and the more his poll numbers go down. And ironically, the more Trump keeps going up. He's being held down in court. He can't do this. He's on a gag order. And he goes out and he does the best version of Trump, which is like every day he's like going to the fire stations. I don't know if you've seen these last couple of days. He's talking to the firemen. He's bringing them pizzas and he's signing stuff. Like, Trump with regular dudes is the best version of Trump, you know, and it's most likable. Him at a McDonald's signing stuff, him at a pizzeria, him with regular people, and you see the crowd respond to him at the bodega in Brooklyn. When you're seeing those things in Harlem, it's the best version of him. So I think the way this is looking, it's trending positive for Trump. And it's magnified when Joe Biden comes to a Midwest state and they really reject his policies because they've felt the weight of these poor decisions on their jobs and on their lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you look at what Joe Biden does for PR these days, and it's like a staged dinner in a Latino family's home, eating some tacos, playing some, you know, Hispanic music on his phone at the podium. Sinking $30 million into, you know, educating Latino voters, like a get out the vote sort of thing. I mean, do you think that resonates with anyone at this point?
No, it just makes them seem more fake than they did already. And that's the reality with most politicians. I kind of like my analogy about the dysfunctional family, and this outsider comes in and points it out. Most politicians come across that way. It's not even a Joe Biden thing. It's most of them. It's a lot of Republicans, you know, as well. Because they don't feel the weight of their decisions and have an empathy for the people. Like, I don't have to be just like you. I don't have to have a beard for you and I to get along. Like, I don't have to pretend we're the same on everything. I might need empathy towards your situation if you're going through a hard time and I say, hey, can I help? But I don't have to pretend I am you for you to relate to me. And that's what these guys try to do. Like, you know, remember Hillary Clinton with her hot sauce when she's on the Breakfast Club. Like, oh, what's the thing you're most likely to have in your purse? Well, hot sauce. It's like, is that the right answer? Like, you're just trying to patronize us. Well, is it working? You know, I mean, she's not even ashamed of being called on it in public. And I don't know how Donald Trump does it, but nothing else. He's an outsider and he's actually had conversations with real people. And, it definitely shows.
Well, his nickname was the blue collar billionaire. Okay, there are two Donald Trumps. There's Donald Trump the man, and then there's Donald Trump the persona. And
yeah,
the more people get to see the man and not the persona, you're exactly correct. It's much to his benefit. I do have to question one thing though, Dave. Did you earlier imply that you and I are not in the same generation?
Well, I just mean you, the listeners, everybody, you know,
these
professors are crazy.
Let me get you on that unicycle.
Yeah, well, we're pretty darn close. Hey, can I end it with one note you said earlier about the dating generation? This is an observation. I got a daughter who is 27. She's in the dating game and she's in these Facebook groups and they're wrapping up. These Gen Z women are looking for conservative men. Even the ones that hate conservative men, when they list what they're wanting and all their complaints, they're looking for what these young men are doing on college campuses.
Amen. That's Dave Whited from Flyover Conservatives. Go to flyoverconservatives.com, download the app, do all the things, and stay tuned for more State of the Nation right after Top of the News Hour, our news with today's news talk, TNT.